I would say that healthy masculinity means to me understanding what it is to be a man and however that is defined for yourself. But ultimately, healthy masculinity is having the capacity to retain the identity of manhood while also being open to vulnerabilities, insecurities, and also having a compassion and empathy toward the female experience, and knowing that men have taken up historically a tremendous amount of space, and to enable women to, or anybody else for that matter, to have a say in this idea of like give space, take space. I think healthy masculinity is, creating space for other people and enabling yourself to be empathetic as well as compassionate.
Hey, Dave here from the Breakfast with Manny podcast, which comes from when my co-host Emmanuel, also known as Manny, and I used to meet regularly for breakfast. When we were discussing the shifting landscape of manhood, mostly by sharing our experiences and our struggles, as well as my coaching courses and my entrepreneurial experience, we realized many men could benefit from discussing these topics. So Breakfast with Manny is going to explore the unseen patterns that sabotage men from realizing their potential, healing, and getting the life, sex, career, and health they want, leading to a healthy masculine life. So, hey everyone, we are here today. Welcome to Breakfast with Manny. I'm super excited today. We'll get into it in a moment with Eric Levin, our guest. Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. And then, as always, Manny, you can't have breakfast with Manny without Manny. Hey, Manny.
Manny here. Thanks. Happy to be here. Eric, thanks for taking some of your time to be here. We'll have a ton of questions, and I'm sure you can share some insightful things with us and the audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as usual, just want to say, don't forget to subscribe. And, you know, Breakfast with Manny is a podcast all around healthy masculinity. And healthy masculinity is a undefined term these days, but it's not defined to a certain group of men, let's say. And Eric, we're going to get into your colorful history and past and who you are in a minute. But how would you introduce yourself to our audience? Who are you?
My name is Eric Levin. I am a former New Yorker that now lives in Dallas, Texas. I work in media. I'm a former producer and director of reality shows. I went into documentary filmmaking for a while. Now I'm a creative director at an ad agency. Identify as a gay man, Jewish, and you know, pretty open, you know, easygoing
cool.
gentleman.
Cool. Yeah, I think you know, not so secretly, I think one of the reasons I wanted to have you on was we chatted first. You and I met at an amazing workshop, first of all. But you know, I want to, you know, Manny and I want inclusivity and broadness when it comes to like the term of masculinity, right? It's not the domain of any one particular group of men. And so I'll ask you, what do we ask a lot of our guests? When we say the term healthy masculinity, what would healthy masculinity mean to you?
I would say that healthy masculinity means to me understanding what it is to be a man and however that is defined for yourself. But ultimately, healthy masculinity is having the capacity to retain the identity of manhood while also being open to vulnerabilities, insecurities, and also having a compassion and empathy toward the female experience, and knowing that men have taken up historically a tremendous amount of space, and to enable women to, or anybody else for that matter, to have a say in this idea of like give space, take space. I think healthy masculinity is creating space for other people and enabling yourself to be empathetic as well as compassionate.
Yeah, I love that. Manny, over to you, bud.
No, I think that's a great way to see it. Eric, I was curious, in your experience, in your day-to-day, do you happen to question sometimes what manhood in general? Dave and I started talking about this often because sometimes, you know, there is sometimes confusion. People with the role of the women now that have, as you mentioned, have taken also more space and are now more present than what men used to be. Before, what do you think has changed? And from your approach and your perspective, do you feel like that affects you in a specific way?
Yeah, I think that this has kind of a two-pronged approach. I think that The Me Too movement was ultimately illuminating for men of all kinds that men have been historically unchecked in a lot of ways. And we've been able to kind of do what we want and get away with what we want. And now there's a certain level of awareness that there have been wrongdoings committed. And in doing so, now that I think that there has been, in a very short amount of time, which can be uncomfortable for a lot of people, a certain level of self-checking in terms of, wait, well, who am I being in this moment? How am I showing up in the world? And then I think the other element of it is that for gay men, you know, I'm a gay man who leans attracted to hypermasculinity. I'm attracted to men who represent a certain level of like quintessential manhood, you know, bigness, muscles, hairy chest, the rugged way of looking like a man, and having those sympathies, but also leaning into a level of hypermasculinity with a sense of awareness. And so I think that there's now being a sense of traditional masculinity that is celebrated by the gay community. And also you can invest in it without having to feel apologetic about it.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I mean, to follow up on that, there's a lot of, as we know, there's the the caricature of the gay male, right? You know, I can't help but go back to like way back in the 80s working at a restaurant, and the waiters used to joke around, you know, like, I have a Caesar salad and smoked salmon and a Singapore sling, you know, that hyper feminine gay role model that's kind of out there. Like, how do you think, and I think we heard it in our group, I don't know if you listened to one of our friends in the group that you and I were in, was talking about almost being excluded from masculinity. But how do you feel for around that type of gay male? Like, they're still a gay man. They may have more effeminate qualities, but masculinity for them, what does it mean?
Yeah, well, I think that, so only up until like maybe the last 20 years, the more in which the more that gay people, gay men have become more accepted into the mainstream, I think that the only representation of gay men that existed were men who could not, due to their innate femininity, they weren't able to stay in the closet. They were gay, and they were away. People were aware of them being gay because they weren't able to, you know, be straight in life where being perceived straight. They weren't able to be in the closet at all. So they had to be on the outside of the closet, and that became the way in which gay men were ultimately perceived. Now that gay men have slid so much into the mainstream, you can be any kind of man and still be gay. And so I think that there's an element there of like now there's a huge spectrum of just because you enjoy having sex with men doesn't actually mean that you're any one kind of gay, that loving men, having sex with men, and being attracted to men isn't necessarily part of a larger culture. There are two separate things. It's like you can love men, have sex with men, and be attracted to men, and then also dip your toe into as much or as little of the gay community as you'd like.
Yeah.
Got That's it. Really interesting. You personally, Eric, growing up, did you have, an internal challenge to go out there and say that you were a gay man? How did it go for you?
Yeah, no. So like when I was a teenager, if I could tell myself now, if I could tell, knowing what I know now and living my life now, if I could go back and tell my 16-year-old self who was depressed, stressed out, and I was 16, this is like the late 90s. It was traumatizing. I mean, I contemplated suicide. I thought that I was incredibly different. It wasn't until the internet, and the internet is responsible for so much of the mainstream of gayness that we see, because we were finally able to connect with one another. You couldn't be gay before the internet unless you had to go out and you had to meet people in person. So I feel like my coming out was really, really tough. And I come from certain privileges. I have a great and loving family. We don't have a huge amount of religious conservatism that would made me think that I was going to hell. But still, the isolation that I felt as a young person, I just wished upon anything. I was like, please don't make this happen to me. I can't believe that this is happening. And then slowly but surely, as I kind of grew up, I went off to college, I was able to come out. But now I love who I am. And I did have a little bit of a needing to recognize who I was, because in all of the outward perceptions of what gay is, you know, people who are effeminate to a certain nature where they cannot be in the closet, I didn't know where I fit with that, because I was like, but wait, I'm not that. So how can I be gay? And so one of my favorite things about being gay now is so confidently outwardly gay as a masculine individual, because I think that there's a level of eye-opening that people, like other people, straight people, are like, oh, I didn't actually think that gay people were this way.
Right.
And so there's a level of, there's a level of awareness that I like bringing forward by being, you know, a perceived straight guy ordinarily in a lot of aspects of my life, and then being like, hey, guess what? I'm gay.
Gay. Gay as fuck. Yeah.
Right. Totally.
Yeah. Well, when I met you, I mean, I didn't know. I have to say, like, wasn't sure. And then you were very upfront about it. Like, oh, by the way, I'm gay male. And, and you're not that traditional caricature of the gay male. So I kind of get how it's almost like you don't fit. With your early days with this, though, when you talk about your experience, did you connect with other gay men eventually and share that they had the same experience, this really difficult, depressive kind of?
For sure. I think that by and large, if you came out any time between the advent of social media, where gay youth is on social media, TikTok, Instagram, gay youth is connecting with each other all over the place. Even if you're in rural Idaho and you're a queer youth, you now know that there are queer youths all around you going through the same experience. There was such a degree of isolationism that I think that anybody who came out pre-internet age dealt with a feeling of there's nobody else to speak to. I'm the only one. And because gay was so stigmatized, you couldn't say to somebody, oh, hey, you know, I think I'm gay, and trust them as a safe space. Right. So I think that I would say anybody who's, you know, coming out was a significant generational struggle throughout history, probably up until the last 15 years.
Okay. Gotcha. You have a unique view of the straight males, right? And women, and you get to see the world from a completely different lens than maybe Manny and I do, or other heterosexual men do. What's your take on, let's say, we'll start with the straight male. We'll start there, and then we'll go to the straight male with the women in his life romantically. See what you see, and what do you see as a is from that different lens, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many different types of straight male, but by and large, like the American straight male is typically confined in what is safe, because gay is still stigmatized, especially for a lot of men that I would say, you know, 40 plus. There are safe, like if you do all of the straight things, if you enjoy golfing, if you watch sports every single Sunday, you go to, you know, craft beer halls, like, you know, you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, these are all safe spaces for straight men to exist in. And so long as they don't broach those spaces, like my brother-in-law, I love him to death. We've got an incredible relationship, super tolerant. But he only exists in these patterns. Every Sunday is a predictable sports game. And he isn't necessarily comfortable doing anything outside of that. You know, he's wearing the fleece vests. He's wearing all the clothing is the same. And so that's what I see by and large of straight men. Now, because of the way that society and culture is changing, there's a sensitivity amongst a lot of straight men that are starting to become much, much more flexible. And I actually think and attribute the mainstreamness of gay men to being a huge aspect of having straight men be able to express themselves differently without the threat and the fear of being gay. by and large, the majority of my friends, my male friends are straight. And through my friendship with them, I've enabled them to be a more flexible, more open-minded, straight person, without any fear that their flexibility somehow connotates them as being less than, weaker, or even bordering into gay territory.
Okay. Gotcha.
Dave and I, we talk a lot about patterns in this podcast. I thought it was a funny image, the one you gave of sometimes we the same habits, the same things we do, and we just don't look really outside. We don't try things that are different. And then sometimes then we, after years, we wonder why things aren't changing in our lives. So I think it's an interesting view of from your perspective. Did your friends, the friends you hang out a lot with, are they friends from like young and early childhood, or these people you met later, they always knew you were gay? Like, I'm curious about that side of the story as well.
Yeah. So I grew up in New Jersey, just over the river from New York City. And while my high school experience wasn't that threatening, there were still things to be, you know, there were bullies, you know, there was a lot of risk. So I understood that I was experiencing gay thoughts, but the option of coming out in high school was just, it was a complete non-option for me. It felt too finite. And I almost was like, okay, you might be experiencing these things. But then once you go to college and you're away from all of this, then you can start experimenting. But fortunately, and this isn't everybody's experience, but my friends were relative outcasts. We were skateboarders, we were punk rockers, we were like the hippie crew. And so there was definitely a greater sense of open-mindedness, but it was really important for me because I was so close to these people that once I got an understanding for myself and felt safe and secure, that I would then come out to them. And I was prepared to lose all of them because that is such a common thing, probably much less so these days, but back in the late 90s and the early aughts, coming out to your family or your friends meant risking the loss of all of them. And a lot of gay men that you might run into, depending on where they grew up and who their friends were, actually severed those relationships. I worked really, really hard at maintaining those straight friendships. And I think that that has enabled me, if we're talking about healthy masculinity, maintaining those straight friendships, because now I have a toe in the straight world. I have a sense of straight perspective, and I'm also gay. And I'm loved by both communities. And I think that for many gay men, if they only involve themselves with being part of holy gay enclaves, where they're living in gay neighborhoods, their nightlife is gay, their vacations are gay, their sports leagues are gay, they lose a sense of both worldism. And so it was really, really, really important for me to ensure that I maintain those friendships and that also that I somewhat bring them over into my perspective, which I think has opened them up. So as much as I, as a gay man, has been opened up at their straight perspective, them leaning into me has enabled them to be more affectionate. They're able to give hugs. They can come to a gay bar without a sense of being threatened or somebody's going to like put their hand on their balls. Like, right. You know, all of those stereotypes have diminished.
Yeah. Yeah, you're reminding me. I used to do some work when I was in the pharmaceutical biz on HIV medication. And there was a pretty flamboyant doc who was a well-known partier. And we all went out and he's like, he was giving me the old lecture. He's like, you're gay. You just don't know it yet. You just don't know it. And I'm like, nah. And I did for fun because I like to fuck around. I'm like, give me a second. I'm going to visualize. And so I go, no, actually, no, I'm not gay. And so he laughed. We had a good laugh. But
but one other thing I was going to say is that there was a tough placement for me because I didn't, when I was coming out, it wasn't until I discovered the bear community and the hyper masculine spectrum of gay identity that I actually felt a sense of relief for myself. Okay. Only because what I saw in terms of the I'm only talking about stereotypes, but the hairdresser, the musical theater gay, none of that related to me, but it was, and I was like, oh my God, wait. This man who looks like a lumberjack and this man who looks like a fireman are kissing. This is an option. Once I understood that that was an option, it was like, oh my God, there's so many more ways to do this than just what you see and feel and is discussed in media per se.
Right, right. Bears community. Do you mind just explaining that to our audience?
Yeah, so the bear community, major subsect of the gay community. Men who lean on the more masculine, representatively more masculine. So beefier bodies, masculine muscles, beards, hairy chest, bellies. Think of your classic, lumberjack. Okay. That's Jason Kelce. He's
gotcha.
Quintessential bear.
Okay, gotcha. Perfect. Cool. One of the things I wanted to ask you is you mentioned it earlier, this concept of toxic masculinity. And I think a lot of men, you mentioned me too, a lot of men, Manny and I have talked about this on a few episodes. I think a lot of men, especially of my vintage, when Me Too came out, if I'm being completely honest, we looked at each other and we're like, oh shit. In 87, that thing I did was, what was that? Just being transparent, and guys were not wanting to be seen as predatory or predators, but it caused a little shrinking back of a lot of men to be very soft and very hesitant with women, for example, right? In a gay community, what was there a lot of expression of toxic masculinity as well? Do you see that? Or is that not something that is a real aspect of the gay community?
You do see it. There is fractioning within the gay community as, if you are masculine to a certain degree and you are not entirely sympathetic to, marginalized communities, there's a certain level of masculine privilege, just like there would be white privilege. Masculine, I have a beautiful sense of chameleonship. I present straight in the world and I have to come out to people. So having that is a sense of privilege because, I'm not immediately marginalized. So there is a sense of chauvinistic based toxic masculinity, or this idea that there's a stigma that's masculine guys are only masculine guys and we're the more effeminate or trans or genderqueer leaning people, are not necessarily being supported by that. So yeah, there is the same level of toxic. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I mean, we're still all under the same umbrella, but there is what I've experienced, a certain level of there's a saying in the gay community that's on a lot of online profiles, mask for mask, which means masculine for masculine. And that excludes a lot of open-mindedness,
Gotcha.
But in terms of consent, which I think is another big part of Me Too, gay men exist in a beautiful universe where we are people who understand each other. We are men who are connecting with other men. So we are able to do things, it's become a little bit more aware, but if you go to a gay bar, depending on the gay bar, it is totally customary. I mean, first off, we're at a lot of these gay bars. We've got our shirts off already. So we're touching each other's chests. We're grabbing each other. So we don't have to deal with as much of a consent-based world.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really big point. One of the probably biggest differences, so I'll tell a story that I told on a earlier episode. So coming out of our workshop, I wanted to be a little more bold in my life. And I was at a cafe and I saw this woman I thought was attractive. And I realized how scared I was. She was talking to a friend. I realized how scared I was to approach. I was really I don't want to bother her and her friend are vibing. I don't want to intrude, let alone would I put my hand on her, obviously, right? It's quite different. It is a completely different world. Interestingly, though, I went over to her. I did summon my courage and went, fuck it, I'm going up. And I started chatting and I asked her to go for a coffee. She said yes. And when I met with her for the coffee, she goes, I haven't had a man come up to me in the wild in 2 years. It doesn't happen as much because we're a little stuck in between. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, totally. I even feel that way with women. Because I have to assume that the women I'm approaching consider me to be straight, right. I get, even as a gay man, I get a little overwhelmed or anxious that they may be under the impression that I'm trying to get something from them other than just approaching them with a hello. So that exists for me as well. Like thinking that like, because the connotation exists for all men, that they're all trying to get something from women, especially like some kind of physical connection, I find that I have to disclose, oh, by the way, you know, I'm gay. This is like, this is a genuine compliment and I'm gay. I'm letting you know that that's okay because I'm actually gay.
Do you see a sound of relief when you say that? They're like, oh, I can now maybe be more myself and open up more because...
Definitely. Okay. It's another privilege that a lot of gay men get to have is security within women. And so, you know, that helps me actually tap into healthy masculinity because I can ride the balance between my straight friends, like looking at me as like some, like just a bro like them, but also having the sense, like, because of the marginalization and oppression that gay men feel, especially coming out or within my experience, I am sympathetic to the marginalization that I think that women undergo. And so women can come to me and disclose to me things that bother them about men that I don't think that they're necessarily feel that safe talking about other men, talking to men, to other men about.
Okay. I'm dying to know. I was just going to ask you this question. What are you hearing from women that's really like on their minds of what they are disappointed with from men and what do they want to see from men?
Yeah, I think that women seem to be ultimately frustrated that men don't understand where they're coming from. And one of the things that I suggest to women is that and this isn't to put down men in any way, but this is something that is, men aren't as complicated as women want them to be. Men, I think, you know, women think and feel, and I think that men think or feel. And, you know, women will say to me, I just wish that he would text me, or, you know, I'm not going to engage because I met him, you know, for coffee at 5 p.m. Here it is this afternoon at 3 p.m. He hasn't followed up. And I'm like, I have to let you know that my head and none of this has anything to do with you. He's just not there in that space. Like men aren't naturally, you know, swirling with thoughts. Like, sure, if it was a really good date, you might hear something, but women are playing this kind of game of feeling as though they're owed or earned a certain level of like courtship. And men are just, not all men, but a lot of men are just absent to the courtship in which women would love for them to play.
I really like you use that word because it's a really old school word. But like courtship and even, you know, gentlemanship and chivalry, these are old terms that I feel like many women, not all, many women like, but there's so many men that are like, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to bother anybody. One of the things I think that was really good advice I heard on a recent clip is the other thing about men is I'll speak for heterosexual men to a degree, a little bit, around like heterosexual men just kind of when they're dating a woman, we do what we want. Like if a guy isn't calling you or doesn't pursue you, he doesn't want to really be with you. Because a guy who really wants to be with a woman, he'll do it. We just do it. It's a there's a simplicity to it, you know?
But, yeah. When I just to also like, we're all failing ourselves by thinking that there are rules. There are no rules, and it has become a dicey situation for men because we are in a culture now where women are leading. Yeah. We're not necessarily supposed to pull the chair out for women when we sit down at dinner. We're not necessarily supposed to go ahead and immediately go ahead and pay for the bill. So now men are caught between this, like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And they're wanting to be more sympathetic than they've ever been. But it's also really hard to say, like, okay, well, where are those boundaries? I find that women get exhausted with men because they, you know, they don't know certain things, and they're not sensitive. But a lot of women are like, oh, he had no idea how to have sex with me. He had no idea how to kiss me. Well, who's teaching men how to do these things? Right. Do you think that there's a class for heterosexual men into how to please women? Like, we're just the blind leading the blind here. And you as women have to be a little bit more compassionate and confident to say, this isn't necessarily working for me. Yeah. This is how it would please me. But everybody's terrified of having that conversation.
I love that point. I think on the sexuality side, like expressing your needs, I mean, a lot of people don't even know their needs, right? But I think it's super awkward for a woman to say like, look, that isn't working for me, because they know men can be pretty sensitive to criticism too, right? So I think it goes in a circle. And I have had many of my women friends, many of them, like, I haven't had an orgasm in forever or whatever. And I'm like, why don't you say something? And they're pretty quiet about it sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to, go ahead. Sorry.
Additionally, there's this level of women feeling as though they're earned like a certain sense of servitude in terms of like I was saying before, like pulling the chair out from under them and, you know, paying for dinner. And in our bridge class, one of our leaders said that it's counterculture to love men. And I think that because men have historically treated women pretty bad, and women have to deal with a lot more things than men have to do, that there's an impatience surrounding male behavior in those ways. And so, you know, I hear from a lot of straight men that they can never feel like enough, that they are always constantly disappointing their female partners. And they confide in me about these things, that they're always a day late and a dollar short, that they didn't do the dishes correctly. And gosh, what a fool, what an idiot. And we see this represented in American advertisements where they're like, oh, honey, don't you know it's the Swiffer? And like, you know, so men do get pushed down by these tropes about like, you know, well, you should know this. But men are really quite simple, and they don't actually know these things.
I'm glad you brought that up, because there is a certain, like you said, one of our master coaches said, it's counterculture to love on men right now. I mean, that does go with a certain stepping up. And one of the other things Manny and I talked about recently is like, men need to come at life with a little more of a, there is no box. So there's nothing wrong with clarifying, like with the woman you're dating, do you appreciate chivalry? Do you expect me to take the bill? Do you like that? Do you not like that? And I can speak from experience. I did go on a few dates with this woman. I asked to coffee and we had a great time. And I was expressing to her, like, you know, I was being curious, like, how did you feel about this? And how do you feel about that? And we were talking about planning our dates. And I said, look, I like taking the lead. I like making the plans. I'm happy to do it. How do you feel about it? She goes, oh, I love that. But once in a while, I'd love to. So perfect. Now we know where we stand, right?
Yeah, totally. And the other thing is that we live in a society and the culture where we always have to appreciate, you know, honey, your hair looks amazing. You look fantastic. Men don't receive that in the same way. And I spent a lot of time, and I'll just disclose, I've come into contact and end up sleeping with a lot of straight married men who happen to have sex with men. And in my relationships and having formed friendships with these men, you'll learn that they've been married for 10, 15, 20 years, and they don't ever get told that they're good looking, that they are worth something. They stop being touched. They stop being flattered. They aren't encouraged to have a robust social circle. And so men start to like shrink into themselves. And because of the society, like men can't be like, you know, I'm actually feeling a little intimidated and weak right now. And be really, really wonderful and helpful if you could just tell me that I'm worth something here. Right. And so I think that I would love, you know, from that perspective, from having that point of view, I see a lot of hurt in the common American heterosexual male because nobody's told them that they look great.
Yeah, I think you're also hitting on something really important, which is this hurt concept, because like you said earlier, and we all know it, like, I don't think most men connect to how unsafe women feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're just not safe. And it's a basic, most men, there's lots of people that have been marginalized, especially some gay men and trans, queer, like they get picked on and they're not safe either. But when you look at the majority of heterosexual men, let's say, like, I feel like I can go walk anywhere and relatively safe. A lot of women aren't. And so I think you're bringing up an interesting concept here, like this. So when men say like, oh, I'm kind of hurt because you don't tell me like I don't have any worth. A lot of women are like, you know, you think you got it bad. Like, and we get into a little bit of a victim contest. And I think both groups deserve some help, compassion, other ways of being, you know.
Yeah.
I want to ask Manny a question actually before we start. I've had this for a while, but Manny, I wanted to ask you. So Manny, you're, what are you, 28 now, 27, right?
I'm going to be 28 soon. I'm 27 right now.
So you've had a girlfriend for a while. I'm just curious. Do you pay the bills a lot? Do you open doors? Do you push her chair in? Where do you stand on that? Or what does she like? Or how does that look?
It's funny because my girlfriend is very 2024, right. In the sense that she doesn't really mind. So she is Latina though. So there is a little bit of the chivalry basic concepts that she appreciates. But doesn't necessarily need, whereas I've spoken to other women before who have told me, you know, for me, it's extremely important that a man does, you know, A, B, C, the traditional things that men typically do. But for her, it's not the case. With that said, I am a bit more of the classic, I like to pay for more things. I like to be, but the thing is, just like Eric said before, the open line of communication, I think it's so, so important because we get fed so much information. I go on social media. And then I hear, you know, women like this, women don't like this, men like this, don't like this. But it just varies a lot nowadays, I think. And being able to talk to your partner about these things, even sex, right? We mentioned sex before, people not giving feedback, not saying what they like, getting frustrated, accumulating a lot of maybe disappointment throughout the years, and then having to look for alternatives. So anyways, all that to say, on my end, it's, you know, it's a little bit more the classical way because I like it that way, but she is like, for her, it doesn't make a big difference if I pay for a bill or not. So that's kind of our current situation.
Yeah. Eric, I'll tell you one quick story that I mentioned that I don't think you heard is real quick. Is just when we were at Barton Springs down in Austin, where a cool spring, I offered my hand to help a woman out of the springs. And she was like, and as you know, at our course, we worked on receiving, but her initial reaction goes, you know, I don't want to take your hand. I'm an independent woman, but we're at the workshop. We're working on receiving. Fuck it. I grabbed her my hand and helped her out. And she literally, with a sense of wonder, was a bit like, I kind of like that. And I think there's a lot of women in that position where they don't really quite, they haven't had it that, you know, and what was really interesting was it dovetailed at dinner to a woman, another woman who totally fine. She's like, I fucking hate it when a guy opens the door for me. And what I just asked her, well, why? And she said, well, because I'm not weak. And I, you know, I just explained to her, I go, can I explain something to you? Like when I open a door for a woman, or I do it for guys too, to be honest, I open doors for people a lot. But when I do it for a woman, I'm not like under my breath going, you weak, pathetic thing, I'm going to open the fucking door. It's not that. So there's an interpretation with that woman that I found fascinating. I'm like, oh, okay. I could see why that's upsetting if you think that, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that we're, you know, whether it's a blessing or it's a curse, where we are in this time in history with social media and all this social consciousness, it's great that we're bringing all of this out into the forefront, but there is no rule book for how I'm supposed to feel. And I do love, like, if women can step into that role of like, you know what, I actually love that aspect of my femininity. I love, you know, when a guy shows me this aspect of things, but it doesn't have to have any further context than that. It doesn't have to, you know, we're all trying to figure ourselves out, and we're hitting all of these glass walls. Like it's like a fun house of mirrors, like, or a fun house of those windows where you think you're walking in a straight line and you're like, oh, you get smacked by something that you didn't know. And then you don't know how to navigate around it.
100%. I do have a question for you based on what you said earlier. You have a lot of straight friends and you're getting a lot of information from them about relationships, about life, about work. As a unique perspective, as a more masculine, coming off as straight gay man, what would your advice be to straight men in today's world? What would just be some like words of wisdom from Eric as that unique lens of what you're hearing from women, what you're hearing from men?
I would just say, communicate and provide context. don't always try to be the hero and don't sell yourself as being a perfect version of yourself. Let people know, these are my insecurities. These are my vulnerabilities. I feel really competent in these levels of my life. And I feel actually pretty, you know, I'm falling short here. But I think with that, like, just be honest and open right from the get-go. And also, you know, a lot of this comes down to sex and physical affection. Like, state what you mean. You know, if sex is an important aspect of your relationship, let people know that sooner or later, and let them know that, like, it's important to me because X, Y, or Z, or you know, it really turns me on when we do this. I think that we bury these leads, and then we have trouble communicating. They have trouble communicating when it comes to that moment. And then when our needs aren't met, it boils down to resentment, but it really has nothing to do with the other person. It has to do with the fact that I'm not getting something that I need. And even the small hints that I'm dropping aren't coming forward. But in the gay world, we have such a freedom to, because we're men, we come from the same place, we understand each other. We can be so open and honest about what it is that we like, and you can do this and don't do this, but try to practice some of that, and please communicate back. Like, you know, that would be my advice. And also just lighten up. Like, let's not take things so seriously. And one action of yours doesn't necessarily identify everything. So just because you try something in the bedroom, something that you might not want to do, doesn't mean that this is going to identify you for the rest of your life. You're just trying some things.
Cool. Eric, I had a question for you. I don't know if I'm going to formulate this correctly, but as a gay guy, you gave the image of you liking, let's say, physically very masculine men. Dave and I talk a lot about, like, feminine and masculine energetics, per se, and I was wondering, in your relationships with these men, with the men that are physically are very, look very manly, is there a polarity? Is there some sort of dance between kind of someone going more feminine in the way they are, even though they're extremely manly, or often you're both extremely masculine showing masculine energetics? I don't know if that makes sense too, but
I think, I mean, this is all a lot of, like, outwardly appearing things, and, you know, but, like, one of the best things about my level of masculinity, or comfortable masculinity, healthy masculinity, is, like, when the time comes, I'm totally willing to queen out. Like, it might not sound or be authentic, but, like, I have no problem, like, doing a fake hair flip or being like, hey girl, or like, you look great. Like, that's all fantastic. But in relationship dynamics, a lot of things break down to, you know, who you are in your sexual role. You can be top, who, you know, you're the penetrator, or you can be bottom and you can be the one who's being penetrated, or you can be verse, which is you go both ways depending on the chemistry and the energy. There isn't necessarily like people will naturally lead as to who they are a lot in a lot of, you know, masculine based gay relationships. There is somebody who just naturally takes the leadership role of being the one who's going to, you know, take care of the bills and, you know, take care of the house things, while the other one is like leans more toward, okay, well, I'll do the grocery shopping. I'll be the one who cooks. I'll be the one who cleans. So those dynamics definitely break down. But depending on the relationship is, you know, if it is like a strictly like kind of top bottom relationship where there's no variance whatsoever, where like their sexual roles are very baked in, there can be that level of like, you know, I'm the top, I'm the more butch one, I'm the leader one, you know, and he, you know, and the other one is the more nurturing. And there's also in this community, the bear community, there's a lot of like daddyism. And so if you're attracted to older, butcher, like masculine men, then the younger person would be the one who's perceived as more subservient. But these aren't hard and fast rules. They're more of just like nuanced roles, so to speak. Like, I love older men. Like, I'm 43. I typically go for men that are somewhere, you know, in their later 40s, 50s. And so I enjoy kind of being the more like subdued, like the boy, and like I enjoy being kind of taken care of and looking up to my partner, and knowing that like my partner appreciates that type of thing.
I love that question, Manny. It's such a brilliant question, because you know, in your answer, Eric, you still expose the importance of like this penetrating, not penetrating, receiving, penetrating energies, right? That provides that chemistry, which is so important.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, and that's really cool. Yeah.
I think that that's the other thing, is that, you know, in heterosexual relationships, the sexual roles are by and large the binary, right? Gay men, I think, get a lot of empathy, compassion, sympathy, and self-learning for the fact that our sexual roles are versatile, meaning that like we understand what it is to not only be a top, but also to be a receiver. Yeah. And also tons of relationships don't even exist with anal sex. You know, for me, it happens and I have it, but it's actually not a priority. But there's just so much more flexibility. And I think that, you know, if men enabled themselves to be vulnerable to where, you know, there's just such a stigma of homosexuality that like, if a woman goes anywhere near my butthole and I actually enjoy it, maybe that right, means I'm gay. Like I'm going to freak out, gay panic. That's not it. You know, that's not it
true,
at all. And
true,
and maybe true. I think men might understand women a little bit better if they allowed themselves to just understand what it feels like to have something inside them, because women are getting penetrated. You are putting yourself inside their bodies. Yeah. It is a huge level of safety and discomfort. Yeah.
Intimacy.
Like there's so many different things. If men were just enabled to like, this doesn't make me gay. This is, you know, but you know, like even like a finger or something. And of course, I preface this with
sure.
there are ways to clean yourselves out so you're not dealing with anything messy, whatever. But I sure. think it's worth straight men delving into these worlds just so they can understand where women are coming from.
Yeah, I really like those comments. I do think a lot of men do fall into that category of, you know, does this make me gay? You know, and they can be missing out on different types of experiences. But you raised something really interesting for me too in the dynamics. I'll go back to heterosexual sexual relationships, or even the relationship. Like a lot of women complain to me, I'm with my guy, we're on the couch, we're planning our weekend, and he goes, I don't know, what do you want to do? And so many women are like, oh my God, boner killer, like, fuck, make a decision, you know, lead me somewhere and have an idea, be creative. And so I think there's some interesting dynamics there too.
Yeah. You asked me earlier, like what advice I would give to, you know, straight men for healthy masculinity. I would also give women the idea of like, you are allowed to do things. You are allowed to have sex without it identifying you. If right. men have this free terrain to go out and experience, you know, sex as a form of sport, whether or not that's healthy or not, but it's casual sex, like, you know, go ahead and have casual sex. Stop. Don't worry about it so much. It's just sex. Like, right. be safe, be responsible, make healthy decisions. Yeah. Have a level of safety, but let's stop being such princesses here. Go out and have sex. Go out and fuck. Okay. Like, it doesn't have to be you, but get it out of your fucking system. You know, you'll yeah. understand yourself better. You'll be able to communicate with your partner better.
Yeah. Well, I will say, like, a lot of my female friends that I talk to, some of them have admitted, they're like, I've shut the shop down. I'm like, I've given up on men. I had a woman tell me that literally like last week. She's like, I've given up on men. Can't find a good one. Da, da, da. Now, I understand it, but also some of it's self-fulfilling, because if you say that, that's all you're going to see, which is a whole other story. But yeah, it's kind of I get it. I think I get it. I think just seeing a lot of women are just not really open, and they're, and I think a lot of women, even because of that lack of trust, they can't really be open. And they, like I said earlier, like a lot of women aren't experiencing orgasms and stuff. And it's like, geez. So,
and they're entitled to it. You are entitled to an orgasm.
You should have orgasms. Right. Yes.
I think that's just because nobody is teaching us. There's no place to go. We should have more like classes and seminars that is like, this is how to learn. You know, there's so much stigma and shame around sex. But women are entitled to orgasm. Like, you know, But I also think that what you were saying about women giving up on men is more, societal based, because I think that women are exhausted from having to take the back seat to so much men, whether it's in the workplace or, you know, men aren't that smart. We're kind of delightful idiots, and women are more organized. They're more talented. They're better at processing things like trauma and grief and all of these things. And they have to wait for men who have been classically put in front of them. So when they say that I'm shutting down on men, is because they're exhausted and they're impatient and they're tired of men needing to catch up to them, yet taking all the space in society.
Well, I'll give you an example. Again, not all men. There's lots of amazing men out there, as you know, and lots of men working towards being better men. And we're talking in some generalities here, but there's certain men out there that just act like boys more. I'll give you an example. Like, I know someone, I recently had a client come to me for coaching who was really upset because her husband of many years, and she has children with, broke up with her by text. And that's a boy move. I'm sorry. Right. Yeah. So I think a lot of men are sort of unsure where their growth lies to really step into the new manhood of like something like integrity and trying new things and getting outside the box and those things. So, you know, as we're getting towards the end, I wanted to mention something you mentioned to me when we first chatted. We talked a little bit about the pink lens, which I thought was kind of fascinating. As we wrap, we'll maybe just touch on that a bit. Like, could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So I just want to say that this was a fully my perspective thing. Like, I thought of, I was like, you know, this term just came to me one day. And so this personally impacts me because it took me a really long time. So I felt like I had to have like two coming outs per se. It was like to come out as not only a gay man, but then to come out as a man who preferred bigger men, hairier men, you know, non-commercially aesthetic men. And, so there, the bear events happen throughout the country, whatever. And I always tell, and so when bear events, there's something in here in even in Texas, it's called Texas Bear Roundup. You know, you put all these men together, there's like 3,000 men there, right? They're shirtless, we're drinking beer. And I always want women to see what's going on, because this is the way men would behave if they had access to women and the way in which men want women physically. Here we are, we're drinking beer, we're putting our hands on each other's chest, we're making out with who we want to make out with. There is a level of consent, like, may I kiss you, whatever. But it's also so free and fluid. And just because we're gay doesn't change our level of who we are as men. Gay men and straight men are really the same thing. We just prefer different having sex with differing people. But we are still inherently men. And so I think that not only would women want to see that perspective, because I think that they would understand men and their approach better, but, the pink lens is that, because of what gay is and our old, assumptions of what gay is, that everything gay gets filtered first and foremost through what I call this pink lens, which is softness, effeminacy, you know, and I think people forget, like, I am kind of a stereotypical chauvinistic consuming male, but because of the fact that I'm gay, I get filtered through this safer pink lens that makes me more approachable, that makes it easier to talk to. But if you were to see the way in which I behave at a bear event, you would consider me a beer drinking obnoxious frat boy. But because everything is filtered through a pink lens, I'm safer, I'm more easygoing, you know, but I do think that that pink lens is problematic for both gay people in terms of us understanding each other more, but also if anything, if a straight guy wants to experiment with a guy in any way, whether it's like, oh, I might be curious about kissing a guy, he is now filtered through that lens, and his heterosexuality amongst himself and his social circle is now forever tainted by that pink lens. Meaning that, if a guy wants to kiss a guy or even have full-blown sex with him just because he's curious just once, his ability to walk back to full-blown heterosexuality, the identity of that, is forever tainted because he has crossed this line. He's made it through this pink lens.
Interesting. Cool. So Manny, any last questions on your end before we look to start to wrap? Or
No, but this is great. I really appreciate you speak very well, by the way, and I appreciate the way you pass on that message, because I think a lot of guys, especially straight guys, but I hope they're going to have, of course, gay guys as well listening to this and hearing your side of the story. So I really appreciate this. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, Eric, I just want to thank you tons. Like, I think the transparency and all the fun and the fun in this, you know, I thought your advice for straight men was like, get a finger in your ass before you do anything else, you know. yeah. But more importantly, like, we are here to expose different angles and different aspects of masculinity, and having our own kind of gay lens today I think it's a great thing for our audience to just be, it's very thought provoking. And, you know, I think it was really great. So I just want to thank you so, so much.
Absolutely. Look, and I appreciate being here so much. And just like the experience we went through with one of our, like, you know, let's not take life so seriously.
Yeah,
there are no rules. There's if no Donald rules. Trump has the potential to be a president in America, there are no rules. So let's stop thinking that we have to, be a specific kind of person to follow. Whose rules, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I actually want to comment on that. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, a lot of heterosexual men now wear nail polish, for example, right? Who gives a fuck? Is that, like, who cares?
Right,
wear exactly. Whatever you want. And I think that's the big message at the end I want to give. Be who you want to be. Like,
Right.
Go nuts.
Right. Right. Just because you wear nail polish does not put you through the pink lens.
Right. But I think for a lot of men, it does. Like, a lot of men look at men that wear nail polish. But I think you're raising something that's really interesting. I'll just circle back to what you said at the beginning. There is a lot more freedom in the gay community. You wear what you want. You're a little more flamboyant. And I know there's a lot of men that don't feel the freedom to do that in the heterosexual community. So anyway, huge thanks again to the audience out there. Hit the subscribe button. Love to hear your thoughts on this episode. I'm sure for some of the people, it was really, like, awkward and almost strange. And I think for some people, really enlightening. And we want to hear it all. So thanks again. And Manny, thanks again, dude.
See you. See you, Dave. Thanks, Eric.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Take care, man.
See you.
Thanks again.
Bye.